ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Canto 12, chapter 6. Text, what is on the board? 33 on the board? 33? We're going to be reading a lot of verses. I don't know how many. Maybe 8 verses or something. We'll be reading up to verse number 41. There's no purports until 41. So please note the scribe. Wherever the scribe is, who's the temple scribe? Who's the scribe? Who's the scribe? Huh? Somebody. Please tell them that tomorrow will be text, probably anyway, text 42 to put on the board tomorrow. Okay? There's not many purports actually in this chapter. Then there'll be another 20 verses or something. I don't know how many, so many verses. So anyway, tomorrow will be 42. We'll be reading 33 on once. Please repeat. Taitarati gacchanti Vishno yat paramam padam Ammameti dojanyam Nayesham Dehagehajam. Please repeat. Te. Does it say te or te in the? Te. In the transliteration it becomes te because the next word is etat. Te. They. Etat. This. Adigashchanti. Come to know Vishnu, our Lord Vishnu, Yat, which, Paramam, the Supreme, Padam, personal situation, Aham, I, Mama, my, Iti, thus, Dhaurjanyam, the depravity, Na, is not. Yesham. For whom? Deha. The body. Deha. And home. Jam. Based upon. Translation, no purport. Such devotees come to understand the supreme transcendental situation of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, because they are no longer polluted by the concept of I and my, which are based on the body and home. Just a question for you. It says here, those who were here yesterday may have read the verse. Such devotees, what devotees? What type of devotees is it referring to? You've got the verse on the board, so you can reflect on the verse. Don't have to repeat the verse. What type of devotees? Very good. Well done. Those who give, who desire to give up all that is not essentially real. Move systematically by negative discrimination of the extraneous to the supreme position of Lord Vishnu. That they analyze the situation in this material world and realize the futility of trying to enjoy this material world. They negate this, those who, this doesn't necessarily mean initially that section of it, the Vaishnavas necessarily, the persons also discriminate in a neti-neti, not this, not that type of a form, this is illusion, and so on. They realize that material endeavors are all a futile waste, basically speaking, unless they lead to spiritual achievement. So giving up petty materialism, they offer, this is the devotees now, they offer their love exclusively to the absolute truth within their hearts and embrace that highest truth in fixed meditation. So that's the position of the devotees, at least the devotees in Shantaras, beginning of devotional service. They focus their entirety on the lotus feet of the Lord, giving up all other shelters, Dharva, Dharma, Pratyagya, and they completely surrender to the Lord, giving up their material attachments, material dependencies, and so on. So today's verse, it refers to those devotees, and they come to understand the supreme transcendental position of Lord Vishnu, because they are no longer polluted by the concept of I am my. This is the material disease, and of course this is still something which we're grappling with. Many of us still may be chanting and doing various things, but the concept of I and my may still be very much influencing our lives, and sometimes it's based on the bodily platform or the family, home, attachments to different things. We've all got various, you know, hidden agendas which we don't like anyone to know about. Also, quite often, not always, but usually, there's something inside which we don't like anyone else to know about, isn't it? Our little private rooms and no one else is allowed to go. But the super soul can see it all, he can't trick in. And now we have to clean those rooms up also. Different types of attachments to our subtle sense enjoyment of various kinds. Such devotees come to understand the supreme transcendental situation of the personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu. Why? Because they are dedicated to the practice, the path. And the path is not external. The external is only to help instigate or evoke the internal cleansing, the purification, by not providing any more dirty thoughts, because one's activities are pure. Evoking the mercy of the devotees by rendering that type of practical service, but in primarily it's to cleanse our consciousness within, not just a surface thing. It's got to go right back. Many times devotees, they engage their senses and engage the mind, even their intellect, but that old false ego is a tough nut. It's the, you know, me, this is me, I'm the best devotee, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that, and, you know, whatever, just that self side of identification of being the doer, basically. Sometimes it hits us hard, and we can't let go of that independent type of touch, you know, just surrender. It goes back to the false ego, not just the mind, intelligence, or to speak of the body and the senses. But the false ego, giving up that false mentality, or let's say consciousness of being independent of the Lord, having that independence Of course there is independence of the soul, but the independence of the soul is meant to be in relationship with Krishna. Not with me in the center, but truly with Krishna in the center. Sacrificing all kinds of self-achievements for the pleasure of Krishna ultimately. To work through the process gradually, as the previous verse indicated, and systematically through these different layers of identification or attachment, to ultimately become attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, which is our real attachment. And soul is really meant to be like a limb of the body or something, it's meant to be attached to the body. But having been separated, one tends to identify with one's separated condition, and it takes a little time usually to realize one's actual connection with the Lord. We'll move on to some other verses. One should tolerate all insults and never fail to show proper respect to any person. Avoiding identification with the material body, one should not create enmity with anyone. For some reason, there's no purport to this verse. Well, there is a purport, of course, but it's not written here. This type of statement is found constantly, or at least regularly, throughout the scripture. One should tolerate all insults. One could look at Rishabh Dev or the Vanti Brahmana or so many personalities who were insulted, even Vidura, Mahatma Vidura, also insulted, grand uncle or whatever it is, Maharaj Parikshit, also insulted. But the great devotees, even Prabhupada, sometimes would tolerate, depending on the situation. If it's an insult to Krishna, one doesn't tolerate, but personal insults, one tolerates. This is Trinada peace, and Nichina Tarora peace, and Hishna. This is supposed to be our guiding principles of our devotional lives, is to be humble, tolerant, like this, more so than the straw on the street, more than the tree. This tolerance is an extremely important aspect of making progress in spiritual life. Prabhupada describes in many places, but one comes to mind in the teachings of Queen Kunti, how the devotee how he responds to insult or ill treatment or critical words or whatever it may appear to be, of seeing that the Lord is speaking through this person for my benefit. It's not this person against me. The Lord is in their heart, the Lord is in our heart, the Lord is everywhere. And in reality, he's actually acting for everyone's welfare. The different situations we find ourselves in, they may be unpleasant for our conditioned self, but actually they're the Lord's grace. This other devotee sees it. I just happened to be reading the book called what is that book about John Lennon? Something about liberation. Prabhupada talking with John Lennon. Something about the liberation, the path of liberation. I can't remember. But on there was a comment by John Lennon saying, when somebody, insults me or insults us, I paint a halo around their head. That's what he said. So, I mean, of course he doesn't, not exactly in devotional service, but his mood was at least to try to see the other person in a different light. Not that, why, this person is my enemy and I'll get my own back on them or something. Or campaign against them. They mistreated me. They deserve to be punished. I'll write a letter to the GBC. Whatever it is. That nonsense. I'll put a letter in one of those websites. This is the best way to stop one's advancement in Krishna consciousness. Well, sometimes, of course, when in proper discussion and proper association, sometimes we have to make some kind of, explanation. But It's got to be in the right mood. Not in the mood of get that guy, tear him down. But in the mood of, you know, trying to help each other genuinely. Genuine concern. Particularly one has to look at oneself and understand that Krishna, through this other person, is trying to point out my faults. And that's what Prabhupada explains. The Lord, through this person, is actually helping me to understand my shortcomings. And it's not their shortcomings. We always tend to harp on their shortcomings. Try to find fault in them. A devotee is supposed to be a dosha darshi. He's supposed to be free of finding faults in others, per se. But the practical side of it, which, especially if you're in, you know, a leadership position of spiritual material leadership, you may have to recognize and deal with, but not in an aggressive way, but in a compassionate and in a constructive way to help the other person in their progress. Not to bring them down, you know, belittle them in any way or speak ill of them. And they just, every one of us is conditioned, and we all have our, you know, some types of shortcomings, obviously. We're not seeing things perfectly in relationship with Krishna. So, as from that point of view, also an element of tolerance within the necessary organized structure of, you know, different principles and rules and so on. But for the person, I think the Bible also says you don't hate the person. You may hate the sin, but not the person. And the person is acting because he's under the bodily concept of life and he's responding accordingly. But from our perspective, we can take great advantage of that. But if we bite back, we lose it. We've made no benefit whatsoever. We've just put, you know, some water on the fire, put the fire of devotion out, and so it's extinguished our progress when we, you know, with ourselves in the center, when we, you know, shoot back at them, defending our so-called. The Lord's trying to remove these coverings, particularly the false ego. Trying to remove those coverings so we can actually become Krishna conscious. So, and the other side of it, of course, amani amanadena kirtaniya sadhari, devotee doesn't expect respect. Not that we should go out of our way thinking, I'm going to be merciful to this devotee by criticizing him or them. That will help them to advance in their spiritual life. I will go out of my way to find faults, even where there are no faults, just to help them to advance in spiritual life. Not like that. And we should see the, all kinds of your management, you have to be common sense, but in general, a devotee sees the good qualities in others and tries to encourage those good qualities in other devotees, other people even. We were discussing a little bit, or trying to yesterday, a little bit about how to encourage newcomers in Krishna consciousness by recognizing some kind of connection which they may have with Krishna consciousness and trying to plug that in. I'm not expecting them to plug in somewhere where they don't really feel connected. Finding that connection, plugging it in so they get a little bit of Krishna conscious injection there. Finding out how the medicine can be, how it can be given, not just, you know, ramming in like a 2-inch thick needle or something. Boom! You might not take it. You might get an electric shock or something. Go away. So the same thing in dealings with ourselves, also being careful not to do things which will be detrimental to our Krishna consciousness. So showing respect, proper respect to any person, showing proper respect also to ourselves, and recognizing what Krishna's given us and how we're responsible for our baggage. But it is also the Lord's gift to us. So being respectful to that means learning how to use that properly in relationship with Krishna, showing respect to our body and mind and everything else that the Lord has given us, and taking responsibility for it, not blaming anyone else for it. We get a lot. We get exactly what we deserve. From the other side, from the positive side, is Krishna trying to teach us through interactions with others to, you know, get free of iron lines, ahamma metti, and so on and so forth. And on the other side is to we should recognize that this is actually releasing me. It's when we're happy, Prabhupada describes it as a reaction of clearing up our good karma. And when things don't go so well, it's clearing up our bad karma. So most people, they just want to get rid of their bad karma. A devotee wants to get rid of his good karma as well as his bad karma. Good karma is just as entangling as bad karma. We have to get free of both. Most people pray, please forgive me for my bad karma, my sinful reactions. But nobody prays, oh my Lord, please relieve me of my good karma. Anyone pray like that? I don't think so. Because they don't have any idea of the nature of the soul. They only see things in terms of matter. So all their prayers are material prayers. Please may I go to heaven. Please forgive me. Please this, please that. Give me this, give me that. Give us this, give us that. It was all illusion. But just a little relation with God is a stepping stone, but it's not, you know, it's not that one's going to be out of the material world. You're still in the water. It's another stepping stone towards reaching the other shore. But you're not there yet. You have to go a little bit beyond that. And then what does it say? A material body. Avoiding identification with a material body, one should not create enmity with anyone. Actually, no, we haven't got any enemy. Prahlad Maharaj states in the States, actually, we have no enemy in this world. Save and accept what? What is our only enemy? The mind. The restless and uncontrolled mind. That's our enemy. Which is influenced by lust, greed, anger, and envy, illusion, and madness. And these are enemies that reside in our minds. Sometimes we sugarcoat them in the name of devotional service. So these are nobody is our enemy, nobody in this world. It's just due to illusion that we identify with this body and we perceive some as friends and some as enemies. But really, really speaking, nobody is our enemy. Everyone is guided by the Supreme Lord. The Lord is in everyone's heart guiding their wanderings. They're only acting out their karmas and so on. We'll go on to the next verse. And still there's no purports for quite a few more verses. Namo Bhagavate Tasmai Krishnaya Kuntamedase. And there's a nice turnaround here. I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the invincible Lord Sri Krishna. Simply by meditating upon Him, upon His lotus feet, I have been able to study and appreciate His great literature. So now, who is speaking here? Who's speaking? I haven't been here for classes. Suta Goswami is speaking. Suta Goswami says, I offer my obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the invincible Lord Sri Krishna. Simply by meditating upon His lotus feet, I have been able to study and appreciate this great literature. That's an interesting, let's say, clue there. It's not just a conditional reading of the book which results in one's effective the purpose revealed. It's not like that. Is taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord is a success formula, not just a mechanical endeavor, which also, as we discussed yesterday, needs to be there. But that's not enough. Not enough. We have to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord if we want to really progress. Mechanical endeavors can take us so far, no doubt, by the grace of the Lord also. But we really have to take shelter of those lotus feet eventually. to actually get realization of the text. Prabhupada describes in the first canto how one can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the pages of the Bhagavatam. But it comes from rapt attention. The rapt attention can take that deeper and deeper and deeper. The woman hears with rapt attention. How to hear with rapt attention a message of Bhagavatam? How can we hear it with rapt? You know this word rapt? What does rapt mean? R-A-P-T. What does it mean? Not as in wrapping, like a bag or something. What does rapt mean? Rapt. A totally absorbed, yeah. Fully, full absorption. Full absorption, yeah. Completely enwrapped in something. You're fully absorbed in it. You become really absorbed in it. And not, you know, not that your mind is doing that something else or thinking of something else or you've got your own private agenda, but you're completely wrapped attention, fixed attention. It's like when we hear the holy name. The more we hear with rapt attention, the more the holy name will reciprocate. It also means, in one sense, we should take it to mean without an ulterior motive. So we're hearing attentively, fully attentively. We work towards that. So how do we work towards that? What does Prabhupada describe? One has to be pure in mind. And to be pure in mind, one has to be pure in one's activities. Pure in eating and sleeping and everything, recreation, everything. Our activity should be molded like that. This is, in of itself, again, you could say it's material, but in relation to Krishna, it's also required that we can hear attentively. Otherwise, the mind will be disturbed. So the whole culture is to help to facilitate the hearing of the holy name, form, quality, and pastimes of the Lord attentively, with fixed attention. Nasta Prayeshu Bhadrishu Nityam Bhagavadasi Bhagavati Utamashu. By hearing it, Bhagavatam attentively, all the dirty things in the heart will be cleansed away, and loving service unto the Personality of God will awaken. So we have to practice. So the culture of society traditionally, nowadays it's all over the place, but traditionally is to facilitate this by proper understanding where we fit in and relationships with persons who are appropriate for our particular nature and activity which is appropriate. And everything, of course, will facilitate the opportunity, according to our position, of hearing and chanting about Krishna coming down from the spiritual leaders of society. And everything will be arranged so it will be minimum disturbance. Minimum disturbance. Now we have maximum disturbance. Practically, not maximum, don't worry, it's a lot. There's a lot more to go yet. But it's maximizing. Even you don't have to do anything, you just have to exist on this planet, you'll be disturbed. Kali Yuga, one thing. And secondly, all the various, and we've got our own baggage too from the past, but all the various, you know, modern methods of communication, they affect us. The whole ether is surcharged with negative vibrations, God knows what's going on, isn't it? I mean, all these mobiles and internets and everything, we have to use them in Krishna's service. They're most essential practically nowadays for communicating the message of Lord Chaitanya. We have to use it, but in reality it does affect people's consciousness. So we have to purify that by trying to utilize these things in Krishna's service and make them valuable. But in principle, though, I mean, just look at the Sutta Goswami is saying here, for instance, simply by meditating upon his lotus feet. If one looks back at the situation in Naimisharanya, thousands of years past, How many sages were assembled there? How many? There may be 50 of us here, I don't know. How many sages were assembled in Naimisharanya? 88,000. It wasn't one or two. There were 88,000 of them. And they were all sat there, attentively hearing. Now even 50 of us can't sit attentive. And we've got a microphone. And you probably slept in it yesterday. Yeah, but they were day and night just hearing constantly. No eating, no sleeping. Maybe in Snagashran they were, but in Ganga they weren't. But they weren't, practically speaking, they were not eating or sleeping. They were fully attentive to hearing the message of Suta Goswami, enwrapped. Even the birds stopped, motionless, silent. The leaves stopped rustling. The wind stopped blowing. Everything was suspended to hear the message of Bhagavatam. How was that possible? Come on. 88,000 people sitting down in some kind of open area, listening and hearing. They must have had powerful sound systems. No, they didn't. They must have had microphones in their ears listening. No, they didn't. Perhaps they had a big screen with it written on. No, they didn't. No electricity, no mobiles. None of these things were there. Because there were none of them on the planet as such. But they all heard the sound vibration. First of all, their minds were pure, undisturbed by all the things that we value in this day and age. And secondly, the ether was pure, so the sound could easily pass without interference. So the combination is like being fertile and potent and fertile. The potency of Suta Goswami and the purity of his words and the purity of the environment, the ether of the environment around. Plus, the fertility of the receptivity of the devotee, of the sages who were assembled there, whose minds were completely pure. There was no other interference in their minds, in their hearts, when they were sat there at least. So those who were in that condition could completely hear with rapt attention. They weren't sitting on each other's heads, like pushing forward to try to hear. They all sat relaxed, absorbed, rapt attention to the message of Suta Goswami. And this is the secret of advancement, even if we have to do many other things in our lives these days. But if we can give this serious time to hearing and chanting the holy name, we have a period of the day. We were discussing yesterday also about, you know, cultivating service to the name and hearing the name attentively and so on. But if we can take this seriously, we take material things seriously. You know, if you're going for a job interview or something, you probably take it quite seriously. There's no point going if you're not going to take it seriously, is there? You go for the job interview, and as soon as the boss or the interviewer speaks, you open up the newspaper, start reading the newspaper, then you go on your mobile phone, then you walk around the room looking out the window talking about the view, and you know, then you start telling him about your wife and your kids and, you know, where you went last night. You're not going to get the job. You're definitely not going to get the job. Not to speak, completely ignore him. You're going to get the job. Totally ignore him. So suddenly, you've got the opportunity, but if we ignore Krishna, he's very merciful, no doubt, but you know, we're going to be a long time before we get the job. And we become a little attentive to his presence there. It's kind of a job interview in one sense. If you pass the test, you'll go back to Godhead. You can take up your real post. no more this material posts. So attentive to the name Krishna, attentive to Bhagavatam. The most important thing we should be attentive to, we're attentive to our family sometimes, we're attentive to our job sometimes. Things we have value, we put value on, we're attentive to our property. Anyone tries to interfere, we usually kick up a fuss. We're attentive to that, anything which is very dear to us, whether it's something on the TV, if you're watching terrible vision, maybe you're doing. Then, you know, you're attentive, you know, there's something you're very, you know, put value to, you really, really are attentive. Hey, don't get quiet, I'm watching the television. You know, my favorite program, or favorite bookie team, or whatever it is you're into, cricket team. Quiet, silent. Glued to the television, no one can interfere with you. You know. Ah, it's all over. Oh, no. My father used to sit glued to the television for hours sometimes, and he would say, that was a load of rubbish. But they were addicted, hoping that something's going to come out of this. I just attended to it. We could have that development, kind of cultivation, attentiveness, even that much. In spiritual life, we'd probably do pretty well. You hear the Bhagavatam, or someone's reading something they're really into. Can't you know, nowadays the kids are all on the what's it? It's games and stuff. You can't get through to them. They're going crazy. You can't speak to them. They don't care less than anything. Food, forget it. Sleep, forget it. Mom and Dad, get out of here. Raised. We can develop that meditation, or that focus on Krishna, on his lotus feet of the safe boat to protect us from this material world, help us cross over the ocean of this material world. Otherwise, we get caught samasatiye padapalavabhavam, mahatpadam punyayushomamari, padhambadiyavatsapram, pram. We have to take shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, otherwise we'll get captured. There's danger at every step. That's our only shelter. The Lord's lotus feet. The Lord's lotus feet, you can say, the dust of his feet appears in this world in the form, so many forms to give us that shelter. We have to, as Prahlada said, we have to smear our body with the dust of the Lord's lotus feet, which basically means the mercy of the devotees, to absorb ourselves in the service of the Vaishnavas, in the service of the name. This is the secret. Lord Chaitanya gave us again and again indication. Service to the devotees and service to the name. Particularly these two aspects of devotional service are so potent. I read two more verses and finish there. And that will not bring us up to 40, whatever I said last time, it will bring us up to 38. So we're going to read 36 and 37 then. Shri Shonaka Uvacha, now Shonaka Rishi speaks. O gentle suitor, please narrate to us how Paila and the other great saint, great intelligent disciples of Shri Vyasadeva, who are known as the standard authorities of Vedic wisdom, spoke and edited the Vedas. The next verse. Sudha Goswami said, O Brahmin, first the subtle vibration of transcendental sound appeared from the sky of the heart of the most elevated Lord Brahma, whose mind was perfectly fixed in spiritual realization. One can perceive this subtle vibration when one stops all external hearing. Therefore, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme Vedic literature, the sages headed by Shonaka desire to trace out its source. End of purport. So we can take both this, searching out, just like Lord Brahma searched out the source, his natural one wants to know one's source. But of course, in this material world, people don't generally, they're not looking. Scientists, no doubt, are looking for source, but they're looking in darkness. They're looking with basically their eyes closed. Looking in the dark, looking in the wrong way. The principle is there, and it's natural the soul wants to know. One of the qualities of the soul, one of the characteristics of the soul, is knowledge. So naturally we all want to know. When we're kids, everyone asks, Mummy, why is this? Why is that? Why is this? Why is that? After a while we kind of like drift into something else. But oftentimes kids ask all sorts of questions. Where did I come from? Where did I come from, Mummy? Isn't it? Some of you may have asked that question, Mummy or Daddy. Where did I come from? So what does Mummy and Daddy say? What do they tell us? Pardon? Somebody remembers what Mum and Dad told us?
The shop.
The shop, yeah, that's what I was told. They said they bought me in Woolworths. There were Woolworths in England now, there's none left, so I don't know where the babies are coming from now. Maybe Tesco's or something. But those days it was Woolworths, so you still got Woolworths here, so you can still get your babies in Australia. You got Woolworths here? The first time I was a little bit old enough to have a walk around Woolworths, I was bewildered. I asked, where's the baby store? There was no baby store there. But they just showed me a bunch of baby clothes. There's no babies. I mean, dollies, no real babies. What else did they tell you? All sorts of stuff, right? What else did you get? What's that bird? The stork, right? A stork suddenly appeared and delivered you here. You see, when babies are born, they usually have a picture of a stork with a basket. So. We found you under, in England they say, under a gooseberry bush, if you know what that is. Maybe under some other kind of bush. Right? All sorts of different things people tell you. Cabbage patch, that was another one people were talking about. Found you in a cabbage patch. It's a little difficult for kids to understand that. And then later on you think, oh, you understand the mechanics of, you know, how did you appear in this room? You appeared from that door. Right? I've been in this room. I don't know anything outside the room. So where you came from? You came from the door. The door calls to a being here. Because you don't know anything beyond the door. You can't see, you've got no means of going beyond it or seeing beyond it. The only way you can understand what's beyond the door is to hear from someone who's been beyond the door. Or at least you can remember being beyond the door. And can describe what's beyond the door. Oh, I don't believe it. We're like frogs in wells. Oh no, there's no way that the ocean, because of my well, can exist. That's not possible. Right? Increase our sort of capacity, so to speak, to the point where we just burst like the frog. We have no real means. So the Vedic literatures are giving that means. We have to listen attentively. It's like a school of colours. If you listen attentively, you can understand the subject, material subject. But if you don't, you won't. We have to listen and hear from the right source. The secret. So they want to hear from Sutta about the real source. What is the real purpose? What is the cause of all this? As Brahma, with rapt attention, heard the sound vibration, transcendental sound vibration, and then disseminated it to his followers, his descendants, so to speak, from Narada Muni, so many great personalities born of Brahma. So here it says one can perceive just subtle vibration in this case. It is also subtle vibrations, not just, I'd say, gross words. It's the vibration that accompanies it. Anyone can repeat the words, but it will not be endowed with a potency to penetrate. Unless there is that. That's why Nivritta Krishna, Nivritta Tarshi Ubigiyamana, Bhavushadi Chotram and Obiyamana. We have to hear from Nivritta Krishna. Those who are freed of this external. All kinds of I and me and mine identities. Those are actually pure, free, pure heart. You have to hear from them. So the succession is supposed to be that line of pure hearing coming down from Brahma in our case, through our line from Mahaprabhu, Mahamadacharya, Mahaprabhu, all the way down to Srila Prabhupada. So we're hearing from him. This is hearing from Prabhupada. This is hearing from the disciple succession. What we have in Srila Prabhupada's book, this is the necessary summation, let's say, of all the knowledge passed down from Lord Brahma, which will have an effectual effect upon us. And we don't need to necessarily to further on this absorption or commitment in these directions. One may sometimes say study the literatures of the previous acharyas as they are, but actually in Prabhupada's books everything is there. Everything you need to know to reach the goal of taking complete shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. Everything is there. Don't need anything else. At a certain point in time everything becomes revealed. It's not that you have to keep speculating or groveling around. Everything becomes revealed in the course of time. One Bhagavad Gita we can see it. Knowledge lifts up everything in due course of time as the sun lifts up everything in the daytime. Or one who dedicates himself to this path realizes that knowledge in due course of time. That realization is given by the Lord. It's a particular of the one given by the Lord. It's not something which is mechanical, probably. The awakening of our dormant affection for the Lord does not depend upon the mechanical process of hearing and chanting, but it depends wholly and solely upon the mercy of the Lord. He reveals it. That he gives the understanding to those who are constantly devoted and worshipping him with love, by which one can come to him. He gives that understanding. This is the principle. We dedicate ourselves to the service and hearing from the pure devotee. And then the Lord reciprocates from the Dhamma Sutta, he cleanses up all the odors of unwanted thoughts within our minds. Clear one can see transcendence, but see directly. Otherwise it remains Rajagriya, it remains very mysterious, covered, hidden. You can read it, you can repeat it, but it doesn't awaken. We don't awaken like that. It's got to be heard from the right source, then the soul, being purified, begins to awaken. Okay, we're going to finish there. We're going to, I believe, near the underground this morning. Krishna, I think we're returning today, is that right? Are we returning today? I don't know when. Are there any comments or questions? Michael? Yeah, we don't tolerate that either. But the way we don't tolerate it has to be very careful. Not that we immediately, lurch into, say, dealing with it the way we perceive it should be dealt with. So it depends on one's responsible position. Obviously, if one, just like take a policeman, for instance, he's authorized to act and he has his rules and regulations how to deal with certain situations. If he moves outside of those situations, he also gets in trouble, doesn't he? He becomes an offender. So he has, there are guidelines in how to deal with these things. And if you don't know, then you don't deal. You have to do, sometimes we make mistakes, obviously. But as much as possible, we take good advice. Or we discuss it with the authorities who are responsible for dealing it and not take things into our own hands. Unless it's absolutely necessary. Sometimes, obviously, there's a situation where there's obvious need. Say, for instance, somebody is mistreating a child or somebody who's helpless, you may have to do something to deal with it, even though it may not ultimately be the best, so to speak, in the bigger picture. But you have to do the needful, sincerely trying to do the best you can. But in many situations, especially if it's senior or more powerful persons involved, then one may be a little bit, one has to be a little careful according to one's position. But it doesn't mean you just keep a blind eye and don't say anything or do anything. You have to know a little bit. That's why society is arranged in such a way that there are persons specifically to deal with certain things. So you report it to them, at least, if you can't, if it's not necessary to deal with it on the spot, or you can't deal with it, or you realize that, you know, it's really not my position to get, you know, make a big show right now. Then you can try to improve it. Like if two devotees are, let's say, you know, one is giving another a hard time, if you can, of course, you try to change or adjust the situation in such a way and then deal with it afterwards. There are different ways and different circumstances you have to deal with. In principle, one has to know one's position, and it's not that we just tolerate mistreatment or whatever we see it as, but we at least we go to, you know, somebody we consider to be an authority and discuss it with them, and maybe we're seeing it wrongly, maybe it's us who's seeing the situation wrong also, but we take some kind of, you know, guidance and report and ask for guidance as to what to do or what could be done or should be done. And there's mistreatment or insult, criticism, whatever it may be amongst devotees particularly, we shouldn't just tolerate that. And sometimes we may have to deal with it directly, and sometimes we may just have to go to the right person to deal with it. Temple president, whatever it is, temple commander, spiritual leader, somebody you can confide in or discuss it with, to get clarification or to simply report the situation. But we don't harbor any kind of negativity or ill feelings as such. Yes, we have to try to do it in such a way that the most benefit can be achieved. One and all. Anything else? Jai Ventura Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaura Premanandi Jai.